and welcome to the STEM Untapped podcast. I'm joined by my co-host Jimena, an A-level student with an interest in aerospace engineering. Hi Jimena, how are you doing?
I'm good.
In this very special episode, we're interviewing Lisa Schott and Carly Liebendorfer from the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation, or ASF, which we will discover more about in this conversation. Lisa and Carly are both engineers, but in different fields and at different points in their careers. Okay, so our first question. Lisa and Carly, you are both previous and current Astronaut Scholarship Foundation scholars. Lisa, you are vice chairman of the ASF, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And together you are a mentor-mentee pair. Could you give our listeners a brief background of the ASF and how your mentorship relationship works?
Sure. The Astronaut Scholarship Foundation is celebrating our 40th anniversary this year. We were founded in 1984 by the original Mercury 7 astronauts. We're very proud of that legacy. We stand on the shoulders of those giants. Astronauts from every program, every U.S. space program since then, have joined the foundation and helped to support our programs, which primarily is to provide scholarships to college level, junior and senior, undergraduate, college students majoring in all STEM fields. The Mercury 7 astronauts created this program and wanted to support from day one. They'd supported all STEM majors because you never know where the next frontier is. You know, innovation occurs in all of the sciences, all of the engineering, technology, and mathematics. So we support all of those.
Could you give us a little bit of background about who the Mercury 7 astronauts were?
Oh, okay, sure. I'm glad that you asked that question. We just kind of, being in the foundation and we're so close to all of these things, we kind of assume everyone knows. The original Mercury 7 astronauts were the first seven people chosen by NASA to fly space missions. They came out of the military test pilot schools primarily, and they flew the first several missions that were ever flown from U.S. soil. And so they included people like Alan Shepard, John Glenn, Scott Carpenter, Gordon Cooper. I could name them all if you'd like, but for many of us growing up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, these were our childhood heroes. Because, of course, Alan Shepard's first flight was in 1961. So a lot of us grew up watching these guys, you know, seeing their bravery, seeing what kind of heroes they were. And I actually got to meet all of them at the early meetings of the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation. I received the scholarship from 1987 to 1990 when I was studying at Georgia Tech in Atlanta. And they are based in Orlando, Florida. So I was hired out of Georgia Tech to come and work as an engineer at Westinghouse Electric, right here in Orlando. And since the foundation was based here and they were so important to helping fund my college education, I decided to volunteer and give something back. So I contacted them and said, you know, how can I help? And came to a meeting where I got to meet the Mercury 7, which as a 22-year-old engineer just coming out of college was quite a thrill. So I've stayed involved with that ever since.
Amazing. And yes, please, could you tell us about your relationship? And Carly, then we'd love to get your take on it as well.
Yes, absolutely. So I mentioned that one of the major things the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation does is provide scholarships to cover tuition, books, other fees that students have to go to school. But we have really expanded our programs, and we have a lot of other supplementary programs that are designed to surround our astronaut scholars, both when they're in college and afterwards as alumni, surround them with all the tools they need for success. And one of those programs is mentoring. One is professional development, networking events, and we can talk about that if you'd like. But the mentoring program is a really great one. During the year that our astronaut scholars receive the scholarship when they're in college, like Carly is in her senior year, actually just finished her senior year, we assign each scholar who wants a mentor to a mentor. And they could be people like me who are alumni astronaut scholars. You might get an astronaut who's a mentor. You might get a CEO of an aerospace company. We have a really great group of mentors that volunteer to do this. It's all volunteer basis. And we just try to talk to the mentees and find out what types of challenges are they facing? What types of advice could they use, maybe with grad school applications or job applications, or even just challenges in, you know, senior project or day-to-day things they're trying to deal with and balancing time and, you know, work-life balance and that sort of, it can be anything. Our mentors and mentees, we encourage to meet at least once a month. Oftentimes it's virtual because we're often located in different locations. And we just provide some, you know, personal guidance and experience. And, you know, with that kind of like setup, I'll let Carly comment on how she sees that relationship and that program.
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, Lisa has been absolutely amazing. And I give her the highest kudos. She has not only been kind of a firm ground for me in times of struggle, but has provided so much insight because I'm also heading to Georgia Tech in the fall for my PhD. But yeah, so I received the scholarship back in May now, so almost just shy of a year. And the process, kind of a brief overview of what that looks like. I applied through my home school based on the requirements that I go to Florida Institute of Technology. So they had some kind of preliminary requirements that I met. So I applied through the school and then I was picked as a final four nominee for the school. And that was sent off to ASF, where then myself and another awardee named Ruth were selected for the 2023 to 2024 school year. And it has just been an amazing experience since. I've loved it. And I'm so sad that our kind of 1 year is coming to an end, but Lisa and I are definitely close friends and we'll definitely stay in touch.
Lisa, could you tell us about, so you own your own business. Could you tell us what that is, please?
So within mechanical engineering, there's a lot of areas that you can specialize in. It's a very broad field. And I am a specialist in acoustics, noise control and vibration. It's a unique field that is well suited to consulting because a lot of companies that need acoustical expertise don't need somebody on their staff full time. They only need the expertise now and then. So that's where I come in. You know, they can hire me for a project and then not use me for, you know, 3 or 4 months and then bring me back in on another project. So I did it because I think I, you know, just have that entrepreneurial history, but I really love having my own business and having the freedom and control to choose the projects I want and do the work that I want. There's two very different aspects to the job. One is designing buildings so that they sound great. In fact, we have a regional performing arts center here that I worked on for 16 years as part of the acoustic design team. It has 4 different theater venues. Sound is awesome. It's been recognized in publications worldwide for having some of the best acoustics. And then the other aspect of the job is more of the engineering side, more of what you might think of the engineering side, is controlling noise and eliminating noise so that, like, you can design a hospital or apartment building so that people don't hear each other from one space to the next, and also reducing the noise and vibration from mechanical equipment. That's another aspect of the job. So I always tell people it's really heavy in physics, and I can work on everything from a power plant to a theater to an apartment building. The physics is the same, but the materials we deploy and the ways we do it change from depending on the type of project it is. So it's a really interesting field.
So Carly, you've just finishing your degree and your master's, is that right?
Yes. So actually today is my last day of undergrad. I kind of double dipped, and I'll graduate in a week and a half officially, and then I'll graduate again in July with my master's degree. So the master's degree, I'm doing it in biomedical engineering, so it's a master's of science, and that is a 30 credit program. And graduating this month, I will have completed 24 of those 30 credits, so I'll just have 6 of my thesis to do. So I'm doing a thesis-based option, which is more research-heavy. And then I'll be going to Georgia Tech to do a PhD in bioengineering. So definitely have had my hands full with STEM courses, but it's been fun.
And you said you're looking at space medicine. Could you tell us more about that?
So gravity doesn't necessarily exist in space like it does here. So the way that your body acts in space is totally different. And the way medicine impacts you is different as well. So we have to kind of find solutions to combat the differences that we're seeing. And it's actually really cool. There's usually every space mission that goes up, there's some kind of medical research going on. And these trips can, last a few days to months. And one story that I heard from an astronaut, which I thought this was so cool. So perks of getting to talk to an astronaut, you get to know about the projects that are going on up in space. He was part of a preliminary testing for a medicine to help postmenopausal women who are experiencing calcium deficiencies. And this is particularly a problem for women that go up to space that are postmenopausal. You know, to keep your bones healthy, they recommend a more active lifestyle, making sure that you're putting constant load on your bones. Well, you're not able to do that in space where gravity doesn't exist, so you're really just floating. So that kind of process is expedited, and you're seeing kind of an increased rate of loss of calcium deposition when they come back down onto Earth. And a drug that was found to work in space came back down to Earth and was approved at the FDA, and is now like clinically prescribed. And that all happened because research was conducted in space and found to work in space, and now people are actually taking it here on Earth right now. So there's applications not only to treat people up there, but to treat people down here on Earth too.
Yeah, I think that's one thing I'd like Jimena to think about, and the other students who are listening, is that there are so many different majors that are used in the space program. You know, biomedical engineering is a huge one right now. As we look to explore farther and go to Mars and go on these longer space missions, we have to understand how the body is going to be affected and how we can treat accidents that might happen or diseases that might occur. Someone's going to be gone for like 2 years. You know, anything can happen at that time. And the biomedical studies that are being done are very important to that. Even my field is used in aerospace engineering. NASA has this gigantic facility that has floor-to-ceiling loudspeakers set up, and they bring in spacecraft and create incredibly loud sound to cause vibrations on the fuselage of the spacecraft to test it for stresses that will occur in space. So, you know, you can major in a lot of different things, or even major in aerospace and have an interest in some of these other areas and still end up working in the space industry.
Could I ask you, because I'm currently doing maths for the maths physics chem. I've got this physics teacher, he's always trashy on biology. He always says biology is not the real science. So in order to do engineering or anything, all you need is physics. But I've heard a lot of experiences of a lot of like biomed students who do go into doing these really interesting projects in space exploration. So what would you say to that? And also, if you think there's like a benefit of doing any sort of mixed formation that mixes like different STEM subjects, such as like biomedical engineering or other similar like degrees in uni?
Yeah, so my response to that is science is science. Whether you're studying physics, whether you're studying biology, it's like comparing apples to oranges, but they all rely on one another. So I don't think necessarily one discipline is better than the other, because they both need each other to do what they do individually.
I agree 100%. I mean, all areas of STEM are equally important. And, you know, we can't all work on one problem. If we were all experts in the same field, nothing would get done. So, you know, you really have to look for where your passion, what you get excited about, intersects with your skills and talents, and figure out what you want to work on. But I definitely don't agree that, you know, one field is better than the other. And really, you need a broad knowledge, especially in the high school level and the early college levels. You need to take a broad range of different science classes in order to succeed. And, you know, one of the most interesting things I discovered at Georgia Tech was the analogies between different sciences. You know, I took an electrical engineering class, a physics class, thermodynamics. And there was one class that kind of tied it all together and said, here's how these formulas in this field are analogous to the formulas in the other field. And once you kind of understand that, then you'll have a much more, I don't know, comprehensive view of problems that arise and how they could be solved than you would if you just stayed laser focused in one particular area.
You asked like if like you would recommend going into a broader field. I just have a little bit of perspective on that I wanted to add. So I just finished my senior design project, and this is like a capstone project where our senior team designs a product. And having the background that biomed engineering has provided me, so I'm going into like electronics and electronic circuits, biology, physics, chemistry, you name it, BMEs, like study it all. And I wouldn't have been able to accomplish what we designed without having that broad overview of many different sciences. And that, you don't need to be a master of everything. You're a jack of many trades. And that honestly is going to make you the full package, I think. Kind of having an idea of multiple things and getting really good at a few of those.
Yeah, so in the subject I'm currently studying, I think it's a very STEM-based. You do see a much lower ratio of boys to girls. Is there something you also experienced in your career or in your university path? And is there any advice you would give on dealing with it?
Oh boy, I think all women in STEM fields have experienced this. It will continue to be a challenge as well as you progress into college and possibly grad school and even into your career. When I started my first engineering job right out of college, I was the first female engineer in my department at Westinghouse Electric, and it was a department of about 150 people. There were other women there, but they were the administrative assistants. You know, one thing you have to do is if you're in an area that you are passionate about and you're skillful in, you know, you're doing good in your STEM classes, be confident. And that's a hard thing to develop, especially when other people might be trying to intimidate you a bit. Try to develop confidence. And if you don't feel the confidence in a certain situation, don't let it show. It will develop over time. And, you know, I would always say, don't be hesitant to speak up and to participate and to even lead class activities, even if you're in the minority in the class. Because I feel like I said this before, when you find your passion and you find that it intersects with skills that you have, I mean, that is so powerful. And that's where you're going to find your success.
Yeah, so this has been actually one of the things that Lisa has helped me with this year with being my mentor, is dealing with this prime issue of having a male colleague kind of talk down to me and, you know, just playing the woman role. And of course, for this project, I was the team lead. And so like I'm his leader and he's still kind of, you know, giving me a hard time. So it's definitely something that I'm just kind of recently experiencing. I've been lucky though, biomed, especially here, is predominantly women. So that has been amazing. So know that there's engineering disciplines out there that have a lot of women. And I think biomed is like kind of notorious for being, I think, more women in the field than men, which is amazing. So it's been definitely really cool being supported by other female engineers. But it's definitely a thing that you have to deal with. And kind of what I've learned, especially as a woman in STEM, you're underestimated a lot of the time. And I honestly love that because people don't expect a lot from you. And I love blowing people away and just doing things that they didn't think a woman could achieve. And it has been super rewarding, just kind of beating everybody's expectations, not only, you know, to beat their expectations, you know, but also to be like, oh my gosh, I can do this. Like, I belong in this field. I am like a woman in engineering and I like will make a difference in the field that I'm doing, regardless of what male colleagues think of me.
And, you know, we all have to support each other. You do have to find other women in the field and support each other and pull each other along.
We've obviously done a lot of research about both of you, but Carly, your CV is really impressive. You're studying, you're doing internships, you're playing lacrosse, like, you know, at an almost professional level. How do you find the time to do everything? And do you have any advice for teenagers who are going to be going to university soon?
So I think this comes back to where, I don't call it how you will, but I call myself a little crazy. I think I am the gold standard for busybody. You know, gold standard might be, I don't know if everybody would want to be like this, but I can't sit still. I always have to be doing things. And I just think that comes from a deep seated desire from watching my dad. Honestly, growing up as a kid, my dad was always present in the family first and foremost, but always working hard. And I just remember like sitting down at him at nighttime and, you know, and he's working on projects and he's telling me about his work and everything. I just thought it was the coolest thing. So growing up with an amazing role model who was involved in so many aspects of life and thriving, I think that kind of honed that in me. And I just have a lot of interests. My interests are very broad. And this kind of comes back to previous conversations too, you know, dipping your toes in a little bit of everything. And that is honestly what I've tried to do over my past 4 years, especially in college. And it's been crazy, but it's been so fun. And I've met a lot of people and had some really, really cool experiences.
Any advice that you give to like teenagers if they want to get into the field of space exploration? Because I know I want to do something related to that. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this would also be interested in that.
Well, I found there's a professional society for everything. You'd be amazed at how niche and how specialized these groups get. So for my particular field, there's a group called the National Council of Acoustical Consultants. The website is ncac.com. And that's where you can learn about what do acoustical consultants do. Carly can speak to her field, but I also want to mention that please go to astronautscholarship.org because we have scholar profiles of a lot of our current students and our alumni. And that might just open up your mind to some really interesting fields that you haven't thought of before, because we have scholars who are working in every possible area of STEM. And we have an area on there called, I think it's Scholar Spotlights, astronautscholarship.org. So that's a place you could start to kind of explore what are these successful students who are getting the astronaut scholarship involved with. You can read about that. It might spark some interest in your mind.
Yeah, I would agree. Definitely check that website out. That's a good place to start. Specifically for my field, though, again, kind of going off of what Lisa said was exactly what I was going to recommend. For biomedical engineering, there's something called the Biomedical Engineering Society, so BMES, which is a professional and student organization with all things biomedical engineering. So I would definitely recommend that. But if you're interested in the broader side of health, I think the National Institutes of Health, so NIH, does a great job at posting publications and science updates on kind of what they've been doing. So definitely a little bit more reading heavy, but if you're interested in that and you want to stay kind of more current with the science and technology that's occurring in the health sector, I think those are great places to go.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the STEM Untapped podcast. If you liked this episode, you can subscribe for free on your podcast app. You can also find more from us on Instagram at STEM Untapped and our website untappedinnovation.com/STEM-untapped. See you next time.